This is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of June 21st, 2020. We'll begin, as we have been, with the latest updates from the local health department. First, from the Ford County Public Health Department, and this is dated June 22nd, 2020 at 3:15 p.m. Ford County Public Health Department is announcing 4 new confirmed cases today. The individuals include a male in his 80s, female under age 20, female in her 50s, and a female in her 60s. Ford County has a total of 27 confirmed cases. There has been 1 COVID-19 related death. These numbers are accurate as of the release time. Public health officials continue to investigate and contact all individuals who have had exposure to individuals that tested positive for COVID-19. Federal privacy restrictions prohibit the release of further information. And from the Iroquois County Public Health Department, as of June 25, 2020, Iroquois County has 155 individuals with laboratory-confirmed cases of COVID-19. At the time of this press release, the Iroquois County Public Health Department has received 2,352 test results for COVID-19. Of the 2,352 results, 2,197 have been negative and 155 have been positive. Here is the information that we can release about our recent cases. Case number 152, a female in her 20s. Case number 153, a male under 10. Case 154, a male in his 60s. And case 155, a female in her 20s. Of the 155 individuals with laboratory-confirmed cases, 125 have recovered and have been released from isolation. 3 are hospitalized, 22 remain isolated at home, and 5 have passed away. We extend our prayers and deepest condolences to the family, friends, and community members affected by these losses. Our communicable disease nurses are working tirelessly to complete investigations, conduct contact tracing, and notify anyone determined to be at risk of exposure. All individuals under Health Department mandated isolation or quarantine are monitored daily until released. The situation is fluid. Guidance and recommendations regarding patients under investigations may evolve as more is learned. We begin with a story in the Ford County Record. Area students earn Reynolds Barwick scholarships. Several area students recently earned Reynolds Barwick scholarships. Each will receive a scholarship to be used towards college, according to information provided by the fund administrators. They were chosen on scholarship and need. The winners are Aileen Diaz, Iroquois West High School, daughter of Yvette Diaz of Onarga; Cindra Lynn Gerdes, Paxton Buckley Loda High School, daughter of Angela Bingham of Buckley; Nicholas Hansen, Clifton High Central High School, son of Scott and Michelle Hansen of Chevanese; Elijah Heisner, Christ Lutheran High School, son of Matt Heisner of Onarga; Abigail Cabe, Cisna Park High School, daughter of Todd and Val Cabe of Cisna Park; Rudolph Rudy King, Crescent City District, son of Josh and Barb King of Milford, and he attends Cisna Park High School; Jake Martin Sheldon, School District, Guardians Michelle and Sherry Johnson of Sheldon, and she attends Milford Area High School; Katie Ruda, Donovan High School, the Guardian parents are not listed; Caitlin Simpson, Milford High School, daughter of Ronald and Carrie Simpson of Midford; Alicia South, Hoopston High School, Wellington District, David and Lorraine South of Wellington; and Caden Stevens, Watseka Community High School, daughter of Neil and Elisa Stevens of Watseka. Turning to the Ford County Chronicle, we have 2 stories from the Illinois State Police. Illinois State Police announced results of occupant restraint enforcement patrols. Ashcom. Illinois State Police, the ISP, District 21 Commander, Captain Don Aaron Harsey, announces the result of occupant restraint enforcement patrols held in Kankakee, Iroquois, and 4 Iroquois and Ford counties on June 18, 2020. These occupant restraint enforcement patrols provide extra patrol coverage for the Illinois State Police, so officers could stay focused on saving lives by making sure all vehicle occupants were buckled up. In the violations and enforcement activity, there were 26 safety belt citations, no child restraint citations. There was a total of 32 citations and 13 written warnings. This project is funded through the Illinois Department of Transportation. And the second story, Illinois State Police announced the use of roadside safety checks. Ashcom. The Illinois State Police District 21 Commander, Captain Don Aaron Harsey, announces the Illinois State Police will conduct roadside safety checks in Kankakee County on July 2nd. The primary detail location will be Kennedy and North Streets in Bradley. The use of roadside safety checks combines a strong sense of public awareness and enforcement in order to save the lives of motoring public. The Illinois State Police has zero tolerance for impaired driving in Illinois. Officers working the detail will be watchful for drivers who are operating in vehicles in an unsafe manner, driving with a suspended or revoked driver's license, transporting open alcoholic beverages, and most importantly, driving under the influence, safety belt and child restraint use, speeding, distracted driving, and all other Illinois vehicle code and criminal violations. Alcohol and drug impairment is a factor in more than 30% of all fatal motor vehicle crashes in Illinois and throughout the United States. Nearly 10,000 people die each year due to alcohol-related impaired driving. Roadside safety checks are designed to keep our roads safe by taking dangerous DUI offenders off the road. The project is funded through the Illinois Department of Transportation. A brief item from the City of Paxson. The City of Paxson to start misting for mosquitoes. Paxson. The City of Paxson will begin misting for mosquitoes on Tuesday, June 23, 2020, beginning at 7 p.m. The City will be misting the same time every Tuesday and Thursday until sometime in the fall. From the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School Board, GCMS School District waiting on reopening guidance from Illinois State Board of Education. Gibson City. Like all other school districts statewide, Gibson City Melvin Sibley is waiting on the Illinois State Board of Education's issuance of guidance for the reopening of schools for the start of the 2020-2021 school year. Illinois State Board of Education is going to issue guidance for what the rules are for returning to school. So the GCMS School District is waiting for the Illinois State Board of Education to issue that guidance before it starts making definitive plans for what action it will look like. Some of that guidance is going to be required, GCMS Superintendent Jeremy Darnell said. Some of that is going to be suggested, and we're going to have to make local decisions on what we want to do with the suggested guidance. Darnell told the GCMS School Board during its meeting Monday, June 22nd, that the ISBE leaked out an announcement the previous Wednesday that it was going to issue school guidance. We expected that at about 5:36 p.m. Friday, but it did not come, Darnell said. As of Monday, the ISBE did not give the GCMS School Board a release date. I'm really hoping we get it sooner rather than later, because we are all anxious to start preparing for whatever the fall return is going to look like, Darnell said. Once the school board gets the guidance, Darnell said he will be working with his administrative team, union leadership, and building leadership to figure out what is reopening the school is going to look like at GCMS. He also said he would release a survey to the community sometime in the next couple of weeks, asking what system community members would be comfortable with, whether the school should come back in the fall with remote learning, in-person learning with restrictions, or a hybrid of both ideas. There are a lot of ideas floating around. Not many of them are good, other than coming back full, Darnell said. In the meantime, GCMS is going to continue with its original registration plans. That may change in the future, Darnell said. If we're still in phase four of reopening Illinois, we'll probably have restriction on the number of people that are coming in, which is fairly easy to do, because we do those things in large open spaces. We'll make adjustments accordingly. During Monday's meeting, the GCMS board passed a motion to approve the individual GCMS school improvement plans. Our focus on school improvement plans right now is making sure we can address the needs of remote learning and also address the needs of social and emotional learning for our students, Darnell said. The board also passed a motion to approve its Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund, which totals $207,000. We will have zero difficulty spending that, Darnell said. According to Aaron Nuss, GCMS Curriculum Director, the school district used a chunk of money to fund the purchases of additional Chromebooks. According to the school board, the district has 1,049 Chromebooks in possession. I'm excited about that. It means our kids are going to have the resources they need, whether they're here or off-site, Darnell said. The GCMS school board passed a motion to sell $8 million worth of bonds. We have to sell the bonds in order to pay back those bonds. Somebody's taking that money, and we're going to pay that back over time through tax dollars, Darnell said. The bonds are out for public sale. The school board will have a public hearing next month, which is where it will say it has $8 million that it is going to bond. In August, the board to do the resolution to sell the bonds with a closing in September. We're going to have a lot of money sitting there before construction happens, so I'm going to talk to personnel and finance, and we'll come back with a recommendation, likely next month, for what we should do with that money, Darnell said. Board approved the renewal of the district's property casualty insurance with Wright Specialty. The cost of the casualty insurance is going up 14.5% for this year, which equates to an $8,000 increase. The biggest reason for the increase, according to Darnell, is the property casualty industry adding COVID-19 liability. There's not much we can do about that, he said. Next year, GCMS Property Casualty Insurance will be up for bids. The board passed the ESA fiscal year 2021 plan. According to Nuss, the plan includes title grants for professional development. Obviously, we're going to be facing restrictions with travel and issues, Darnell said. We don't know what that is going to look like. And the school board passed its school-wide waiver for fiscal year 2021. If a school does not have at least 40% of the kids identified as free or reduced lunch, you have to apply for a waiver in order to use Title I funds for that school, Darnell said. The waiver is simply saying that we're going to utilize those funds in that school, even though we do not have 40% free or reduced lunch. That allows us to use our Title I funds in a unit district universally across the board. That way, if we have students with needs at the high school level, we can use some of those funds to address those needs. The school board also approved the fiscal year 2021 consolidated district plan. And the board approved a facility use agreement, pending proof of insurance and all other district requirements, for a SAT testing site. We're going to offer it just because there's not a testing site in our area, and other spots in this area are filling up quick, so this will be completely separate from the school, Nuss said. Also in the news, Danville resident killed in vehicle accident in Iroquois County, Woodland. On Tuesday, June 23rd, the Iroquois County Sheriff's Office investigated a fatal single vehicle accident on County Road 1400 North, west of Woodland. The sole occupant of the vehicle, 39-year-old Marion Hughes of Danville, was killed after his vehicle left the roadway and hit a tree. Hughes was transported to the Iroquois Memorial Hospital by Crescent City Emergency Medical Services, where he was pronounced dead. The sheriff's office was assisted at the scene by Crescent City and Woodland Fire Departments and the Iroquois County Coroner's Office. Next, a story with statewide implications. As state enters Phase 4 Friday, Pritzker not afraid to move backward if COVID-19 cases surge. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced a new tool to track county-by-county progress in the fight against the novel coronavirus Thursday. But as the state ready to enter the next phase of reopening, he also warned that he would not hesitate to move certain regions backward if progress subsides. The announcement came as the Illinois Department of Public Health announced 894 new cases of COVID-19 over the previous 24 hours, the most since June 6th, when there were 975 reported. But the Illinois Department of Public Health also announced there were 31,686 more tests completed over the previous 24 hours, the highest single-day total yet, making the positivity rate 2.8% for the one-day period. Over the past 7 days, the positivity rate has ranged from 2.4 to 2.9%, and over the 7 days prior to that period, it ranged from 1.8 to 3.1%, meaning Thursday's rate was within the range of average of the last few weeks. Obviously, every day I watch the numbers and I think, you know, are we going in the right direction? And I'm rooting for it to go in the right direction, and we're making policies that we hope will move it in the right direction, Pritzker said when asked about the bump in new cases at a Chicago news conference Thursday. We're watching. I would want to wait to make a judgment about whether there's some direction here that's going, but right now I would call it stable. Pritzker said the stability has moved the state towards phase four of reopening Friday, but Illinoisans will need to continue to wash their hands, remain 6 feet apart from others in public, and wear face coverings if they want to keep the numbers low. In phase four, restaurants can open for indoor dining with restrictions, movie theaters can reopen, and gatherings of up to 50 are allowed. The state also announced that casinos and video gaming will reopen on Wednesday, July 1st as well. If the COVID-19 numbers do increase, a reversion to previous phases is possible, however. I'm not afraid to protect the people of Illinois by moving a region back to an earlier phase if we see a surge, he said. Ours will not be one of the states that takes no action in response to a return to the peak. Hospitalization metrics remained on a downtrend in Illinois as well, in contrast, Pritzker said, to states like Texas. As of 11:59 p.m. Wednesday, there were 1,626 total hospital beds in use by COVID-19 patients, 399 of which were in intensive care units. Both were up slightly from the day before, but represented the second lowest number since the state began reporting the metrics daily on April 12th. There were 216 ventilators in use, the lowest amount in the same span. But now I want to tell you that there is still a reality check behind that. The virus has not been eradicated, the virus persists, and we don't yet have a vaccine or a highly effective treatment that's widely available, Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Aziki said at the news conference. So although we are seeing fewer and fewer cases, fewer deaths, people are still being infected and people are still losing their lives. There were 41 more COVID-19 related deaths reported Thursday, bringing the total since the pandemic began to 6,810, while the total cases grew to 139,434 among the more than 1.4 million tested. Our goal is that with that caution, you will think twice about your own personal habits and activities, Ezeke said. Maybe you'll think about reconsidering going out in that large group gathering. Maybe you'll reconsider going to an indoor dining experience. Maybe you'll consider appreciating a religious gathering online as opposed to in person. These county-level risk indicators do not necessarily mean that a county moves back. What it means is that if the numbers don't improve, we could be headed in the wrong direction. Pritzker said wearing face coverings is a key protection from the virus and from moving back economically. The virus hasn't gone away, and when people aren't wearing face coverings and gathering in large groups and not practicing any physical distancing, they're getting sick and some are dying, he said. And I mean people of all ages, senior citizens, those who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s with pre-existing conditions. And yes, even young and perfectly healthy people have lost their lives to this terrible new disease we know so little about. Pritzker also announced that the state launched 12 mobile community testing teams that will move throughout the state to mitigate and support emerging outbreaks, including places like meat packing plants, nursing homes, or other traceable gatherings. The state has also increased its number of contact tracers by 20% since June 1st and has more than 550 active, the governor said. Another 250 tracers will join them in the coming weeks. Now we'll turn to the Ford County obituaries for the week of June 21st, 2020. Ivan Chris Andrier, Paxton. Ivan Chris Andrier, 94 of Paxton, formerly of Gibson City, passed on to his heavenly home on Wednesday, June 17th at 11:40 a.m. following complications from a stroke. Services will be held at St. John's Lutheran Church in Anchor at a later date due to COVID-19 concerns. Dolores Louise Maggers, Paxton. Dolores Louise Maggers, 85 of Paxton, passed away at 7:27 p.m. Tuesday, June 16, 2020, at Washington Regional Medical Center, Fayetteville, Arkansas. A graveside visitation will be held Saturday, June 27, 2020, from 10 a.m. to noon at the Maplewood Cemetery in Rantoul, where friends and family will be allowed to drive beside the tent, lower their windows, and speak to the family briefly. A private family burial will follow, with Pastor Rachel Stockel officiating. Memorials may be made to Pheasants Forever or the Loda United Methodist Church. Caleb M. Roberts, Gibson City. Caleb M. Roberts, 28, of Gibson City, died Wednesday, June 17, 2020. A celebration of Caleb's life will be held June 27 to 28 in Duke, Missouri, where Caleb enjoyed the outdoors and being at the family cabin. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to the family. William Edwin Muser, and that's spelled M-E-U-S-E-R, Springdale, Arkansas. William Edwin Muser passed away Tuesday, June 9, 2020, at Washington Regional Medical Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas, at the age of 87 from COVID-19. Bill will be laid to rest in a private graveside service at Maplewood Cemetery in Rantoul on Saturday, June 27, 2020. A Celebration of Life memorial service will be held at a later date in Arkansas for family and friends. John Martin Kaufman, Gibson City. John Martin Kaufman was passed away peacefully on June 15, 2020. A graveside service will be held Friday, June 26th at 2 p.m. at the Gibson City Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family prefers donation to the Gibson Hospital Annex. Mandy Renee Abbey, Paxton. Mandy Renee Abbey, 43, of Paxton, passed away at 8:31 p.m. Sunday, June 21st, 2020, at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. Visitation was held Thursday, June 25th at St. John's Lutheran Church. A private family funeral service will be held, followed by burial in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to Christ Lutheran High School or St. John's Lutheran School, both in Buckley, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Ed Colfer, Milford. Ed Colfer, 74, of Milford, passed away on Tuesday, June 23, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until 2 p.m., with a funeral service on Friday, June 26, 2020, at the Milford Christian Church. The Reverend Brent Zastro and the Reverend Neil Larimore will officiate. Burial will follow at Sugar Creek Cemetery in Stockton, with military graveside rites by the Watsika American Legion Post No. 23 and Iroquois County VFW Post No. 7450. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Milford Christian Church or to the International Disaster Emergency Services, P.O. Box 379, Noblesville, Indiana, 46061. Now we'll return to the paper and to the opinions page with a column from David Porter, Thinking About My Storage Shed. We have one of those pre-made storage sheds in our backyard. It looks like a miniature barn. We open it up about twice a year to pull out or put back seasonal stuff like garden hoses and snow shovels. The rest of the stuff in there is basically garbage. It's stuff that, for whatever reason, we didn't want to throw away, yet we know we'll never use again. It's the kind of stuff you wouldn't keep if you didn't have a place to put it. Bikes that haven't been ridden in more than a decade, a mower that doesn't run, floor mats from a car we no longer own. You get the picture. I've been living here for the past 6 years, and for the past five, I've been thinking about painting the shed. I think about doing a lot of things that I'll probably never do, but it's the thought that counts, isn't it? The shed is about 10 feet from my hammock, where I do a lot of my thinking. When I'm in the hammock is when I think most about painting the shed because I can see it. The shed is in a corner of the yard where I never see it unless I'm in the hammock. Out of sight, out of mind. The only good view of the shed from our house is from the window of our spare bedroom, which is our indoor shed. Like its outdoor counterpart, that room is also full of stuff we wouldn't keep if we had no place to put it. Old clothes we never wear, books we'll never read again, games we don't play, and boxes of broken and outdated electronics. We can't put that stuff out of the shed because it would get ruined. We don't want to ruin the good stuff we'll never use again. I was looking at the shed the other day while I was thinking in my thinking spot, and I was thinking that it's now beyond paint. I was thinking that I'll cover it over with vinyl siding to match the house. I'll probably think about that for a few years. It was time to retrieve the garden hoses, so I opened the shed up and was met by a cascade of tiny critters falling from the header across the door. Termites. Seems the shed was not void of occupancy after all. We knew it housed plenty of spiders, and we had noticed that some kind of animal had been burrowing underneath, but we weren't concerned about any of that. But termites? We can't have that. I got to looking around, and the termite population is way worse than I imagined. The base of the wood siding all around the shed was just a paper-thin facade hiding the damage behind it. We are now going to have to weigh our repair or replace options. Maybe the thing to do is get rid of all the junk inside the shed and take the whole thing down. Then, where would we put the new old junk that we know we'll never use again but don't want to throw out? That is what you call a first world problem. It's going to require some more thinking. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the news from Ford County. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.